It's time to experience the Synergy Connection Show with your host, Lucy Forsting.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the Synergy Connection Show. I have Doug Warner with me again, and our topic is going to be how to hear your calling. And we've been discussing, you know, the possibilities of where this talk might go today, since it is just a general conversation between Doug and I. Before we begin, though, I want to remind you to check out synergyconnectionradio.com. For all of the shows that are archived there, including Doug's show that we did on labyrinths. And that was back in December, I believe. So it was a terrific show, and I did go to his labyrinth training, and that was so interesting. So he is going to talk a little bit today about future avenues with labyrinth work that he will be doing, I think. When you're on my website, if you will click on the Boomer banner, B-O-O-M-E-R, and go into their website, that is a foundation for nutrition. And if we don't have our health, which is one of these dots that we connect between the physical, spiritual, emotional, and mental, if you don't have your health, it's pretty tough to connect the other three, because that is your foundation. If you decide to purchase anything when you're on the Boomer website, if you just use my name, L-U-C-Y, in the promo code, you're going to get $5 off of your order. And I think every little bit helps. That's the way I look at it. So sometimes they have free shipping. Sometimes if you're local, you can pick up right at their building on Central Avenue. So at any rate, I hope you take a few minutes just to check out the Boomer website. You can also sign up for their free newsletter, their health newsletter. And so now I'm going to come back to Doug. And Doug is a lot of different things, actually. But he's a yoga and meditation teacher, and he's also a certified labyrinth facilitator, which is, it sounds more complicated than probably what it is. He's also a Florida licensed massage therapist, and I haven't had a massage by him, but I'm sure he's fabulous. So how can people get hold of you if after listening this morning they go, wow, that's somebody I need to go meet?
Well, first, thank you again for having me back, Lucy.
You're welcome.
I thoroughly enjoy it. The best way, I believe, to get a hold of me and open a conversation, should be, you'd be interested, is to first go to my email address, which is douglas@warnerhealingguidance.com. No spaces in there. My phone number is 727-804-5356. For conversation, those are going to be the best, but I have some other resources. I have a Facebook page, which is, everyone knows how to, I believe, use Facebook, so you can go to this site and like it and share it and what have you. It's facebook.com/Warner Healing Guidance. And lastly, I have a YouTube channel.
Which, and I've gone there, so that's kind of fun. You've got a lot of YouTube videos.
I got about 60, close to 60 videos.
Yeah.
And that's youtube.com/Douglas Warner. Okay, so yeah, and most of those videos have to do with meditation. Some yoga applied philosophy is involved there. And so just some guidelines for daily living. So anyway, I invite everyone to check out any of the things I got available.
And you have a lot. So, all right, that all works. When we did our last show, we were talking about labyrinths. And I, like I said, mm-hmm. I kind of did that workshop with you. And it was very enlightening, I would say, revealing on a couple of different levels. And I thought it was interesting because... Do you remember the battery that didn't work?
Yes, we had on the labyrinth, which is a large 24-foot by 24-foot canvas floor labyrinth with the design of the labyrinth on it, and people walk this mm-hmm. labyrinth. And around the perimeter and various parts of the labyrinth, I had little tea lights, mm-hmm. the little battery-operated tea lights for atmosphere, if you will.
Oh, it's beautiful.
And your experience was?
Well, For one thing, I'd never walked a labyrinth like that. Mm-hmm. You know, usually it's in a church or something that's right. a little easier. But you really do have to pay attention when you're on the path. Otherwise, you'll step into the wrong path. Mm. And so I was looking down. And I didn't pay any attention to the fact that when I got to the center to drop in my stone, that that was a non-functional battery that was in that particular tea light.
Yeah.
And I guess as I put my stone in, from other observers, the light went on and it stayed on then the rest of the time. So I had no idea. Mm-hmm. And at the very end, there was a woman there that leaned forward and pointed that out. And she said, I don't know whether you knew that or not. But energetically, I'm guessing that because I carry a lot of healing energy with me at all times, mm-hmm. that maybe somehow the energy that I had as I reached down into the bowl to put my stone transferred over to the battery and it came on. I don't know any other way to explain it.
I think that's as best an explanation as I could muster. One of the things that I coach students to do when they walk a labyrinth is take everything that happens in the labyrinth. Mm-hmm. Any of your thoughts, any of these metaphors that we run into. But
right.
look in it, everything that comes up in the labyrinth or happens, look at it metaphorically. Uh-huh. If, for instance, and this happens quite often, if you start to get concerned that you're getting lost.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, look at that. Is this reflecting something in my life?
Mm-hmm.
The labyrinth is, walking the labyrinth, is a very powerful self-reflective tool.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a mirror of where we are right now in life. We make these turnarounds, you know, mm-hmm. these 180-degree pivots.
Right.
Well, how many of us have had to pivot in life?
Well,
we may be doing
sure.
that right now.
Right.
And what comes up emotionally, psychologically, maybe even physically, mm-hmm. that happens. Take it as a metaphor for where you might be right now. And I think that what happened with you with the tea light, and it was a perfect example of maybe just the universe confirming
mm-hmm. that I was heading in the right
direction.
You're
heading in the right direction. You know, the light went on.
Right. Well, you know, kind of going down that road a little bit, feathers are very important mm-hmm. to me. And in the last, I would say not even year, I found one that was on my front doormat, a little tiny dove feather. And a day later, there was a dove on a building, a white dove, that was giving me some guidance in regard to a situation that I happened to be encountering at that moment. And she stayed there for a good 20 minutes while I just observed her. I took a picture, and you can see the aura around her.
Huh.
And why do I know it was a she? I don't know, but something told me that it was a
mm-hmm.
female.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the last couple of weeks, I was at a little farm where it was like a farmette, and they had geese. Okay, so there were two white geese feathers, small ones, that were very pristine, very clean. And so I picked them up. And I put them in my purse. You know, it's just an open bag, so I didn't put them in anything special. And I forgot about them. And so I had this crazy dream maybe a week ago now.
Mm-hmm.
And the dream was a little frightening to me, actually, but it was full of symbolism. And so while I was showering, I get out of the shower, and one of those white feathers is on the counter. I have no idea how it got there. Because it had been probably in the bottom of my purse, but there it was on at the counter. And it totally freaked me out at first because I didn't even know where the feather came from. Then I realized that it was, you know, from the farm. This morning, just before you got here, again, I'm getting out of the shower early this morning, and the second feather magically appeared on the floor. I have no idea how it got there. So I think you're part of the feather response here, but I think that the feathers, because they are white, because mm-hmm. they're some from doves, some from, you know, geese, but I don't know. It's fascinating to me how this is unfolding, and there's so much symbolism, just like with mm-hmm. the tea light.
Oh, absolutely. This is pulling back to this idea of the call, being called to something.
Mm-hmm. That path.
The path, whatever path you're on.
Mm-hmm.
In order to live in that place, to be able to hear these callings we talk about,
mm-hmm.
we have to open ourselves up to another way of knowing. Because otherwise, we're going to miss 90% or more of what is unfolding around us.
Right.
We have to open ourselves to what are called the intuitive consciousness. Unfortunately, and we talked in the last show a little bit about this idea of intuition, and especially for guys, intuition is just...
It's scary.
It's scary, and it's it's been written off as being, oh, that's a woman thing, you know, female intuition, and even women. So, because they're equating it with an emotional response,
mm-hmm.
and that not really understanding the intuitive side of
right.
who we are.
Right.
And as we use these various tools, like the labyrinth is a tool. It's a tool to help us get out of our head and into the heart,
mm-hmm.
to listen not just to the ranting of the brain, the cerebral cortex, but there's another way of knowing. I call it the heart knowing, the intuitive consciousness. And this is where we learn to go for wisdom, for discernment, and for true compassion.
Are you familiar with the Heart Math Institute?
No.
That's one you need to look into,
okay.
for sure. They've been doing research in California for years and years and years, and they now have a movement. I believe it's been going on for possibly as long as 20 years. But it is a heart coherence movement where people from all over the world are beginning to meditate on world peace, mm. on solving a lot of these issues, because we know that the heart vibrates at a different level
mm-hmm.
than the rest of our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get into heart coherence, you're sending out a different kind of vibration. So there's an actual... I'll have to have you try it the next time we're together.
Okay.
I have a device that's called the Inner Balance.
Mm-hmm.
I've never talked to you about that, right?
I don't think so.
All right. You clip it to your ear, and then you clip it to your clothing so it doesn't just hang down.
Mm-hmm.
You put an app on your phone, and it's a mandala, and
mm-hmm.
it breathes. It goes
mm-hmm.
in and out,
mm-hmm.
so it expands and contracts. And as you focus there, it will tell you if you're in heart coherence. So it'll start with red if you're in your head, which
mm-hmm.
is kind of a good way to, I mean, a little rhyming poem
mm-hmm.
there. But if your thoughts are there instead of in your heart, and you're thinking about what have I got to do for dinner tonight, and I got to remember to stop and get this, and, you know, just
right.
those kind of mental notes that we make, then it dings, but it's red. It tells you it's a different tone. And so the objective is to go all the way around the mandala with the green color, because then you're in heart coherence. So if you're in red, it's a louder ding. As you move to blue, it's a little bit softer. When you're in green, it's a very light
mm-hmm.
sound. And again, the objective is to go all the way around. But it teaches you how to get out of that anxiety-producing head
yep.
into a very peaceful heart rhythm.
Very interesting, because, you know, the mandala, I'm not sure if everyone knows what a mandala is, but
that's a good thing to explain.
Mandala is coming from the yoga tradition originally, through Hinduism and even Buddhism they use it now, but actually in Christianity we are using mandalas
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm.
The labyrinth is actually a mandala,
mm-hmm.
and
it's
exactly what it is. It's a divine imprint. It's an archetypical
image.
And
they use them with stained glass windows in churches.
They do. In fact, I did some training in North Carolina. I gave some training on labyrinths, and one of the Methodist churches had just installed a 24-foot labyrinth out of stone marble in the floor of their church.
Oh, wow.
So this is becoming more and more accepted. In fact, the motif and the labyrinth I own is a replica of the medieval labyrinth that's in Chartres Cathedral in France, Chartres, France. That is probably the best known labyrinth.
And they move the pews when people walk on that one.
There's no pews.
Oh, okay. I thought there were.
They're chairs.
Okay. But they move them away from it.
They move them, but it's interesting because in short, first of all, medieval churches, they didn't use pews
mm-hmm.
because people stood during the services. Okay. So now they have folding chairs. And as I've been told, it's very rare for them to have the chairs folded up and off the labyrinth. It's just maybe two or three times, four times a year.
Mm-hmm.
And but They do move them. But this labyrinth, and this is a whole discussion about labyrinths, but I want to kind of bring it to this calling idea, because the labyrinth is a mandala, and mandala is, by definition, a visual focal point for meditation, as opposed to a mantra, which are words.
Exactly, and that's more what you hear, obviously.
It's what you hear. It would be a chant, or it would be something you listen to, or you listen to your... So the difference is mandala is a visual focal point. Not always, but most of the time the mandala is in a circle, which is an archetypical design. Okay, and just reviewing from last time, the labyrinth combines, and I say archetypical, I'm going back to Carl Jung, his idea of man and his symbols and the archetypes. These are images, these are designs that are as deep as our DNA, that we resonate with these as humans.
A lot of them are all in nature.
So. They reflect nature, because the circle, of course, is in nature, and everywhere we see it. But also, the labyrinth is a combination of the circle and the spiral. And we see the spiral from the structure of our double helix and our DNA up to the Milky Way galaxy.
Exactly.
So you're connecting with something that's very intrinsic in the human experience. And it also is throwing you into, as you were saying, you have to pay attention. The labyrinth does two things. It engages you physically. It dispels physical energy. I said to a lot of my students, how many are failed meditators? Because, Doug, I can't sit there cross-legged and go,
Om
and what have you. You know, said, my nose didn't itch all day, and all of a sudden as I sit down to meditate, now I can't, my nose won't leave me alone. But it dispels the physical energy because you're walking. But because of the nature of the circuitous walk, you have to focus. So you're focusing and concentrating and moving. This occupies the mind,
the cerebral cortex, the monkey brain,
and it occupies the body. Right. So they don't have to go to war with you. And it opens you, it opens that tight weave of the mind, the cerebral cortex, to let something else come through. Intuition, being spoken to, but from that heart consciousness. Okay, and again, that's not an emotional place. And this is the world of metaphor. This is where metaphor, we recognize metaphor. We talked about, talking about being called. I think all people are called for various things in their lives. And most of the time, most people don't hear him, or they don't see him, or they don't recognize a calling.
Yeah.
I had to be, when I talked in the last show about being called to pilgrimage in reference to something I was trying to construct for my son, an experience, literally the universe had to almost hit me with something because I wasn't paying attention. And once you're open to that and you're saying, oh my gosh, this is what I've got to do, and you connect just like... I said, I know what it feels like now to connect with that part of myself and follow it, because no intellectual conviction I've ever had has been as strong as a heart conviction.
Right, right. And it's just a knowing.
It's a knowing. That's really what it is. It's not even a feeling. It's not an emotion. It's a knowing. And I also say, and this is, I'm just a little bit off here, but it's interesting because 2020 has been a year where and the end of 2019, where I've lost a few friends and students and what have you. And I have had the opportunity to talk with folks. Of course, I've read some things. I'm sure you have too. Near-death experiences. Okay. I've never had a near-death experience, personally. But through what I've read, and more importantly, for the few people that I've talked to, there's similarity in experiences. Some of them, and we mentioned this last time in our program, I think, but there may be some differences. Someone who grew up in a certain religious tradition may have a vision of a saint or Jesus or whatever, okay? But there's one thing that just hit me, is that every person who had a near-death experience came back with the conviction, the knowing at this level, that this realm of existence is not all there is.
Right. And that they are no longer afraid.
And they're no longer afraid of dying.
Right.
So, in using tools like the labyrinth, in opening to that part of ourselves, and I'll make connections to yoga in this in a second, I think I call that near-life experiences. It gives you the same conviction, I believe, or a similar conviction, as a near-death experience. It throws us out of the field of the mind and throws us into another field of knowing. And after connecting with this part of ourselves and starting to operate out of that, that same conviction is, yeah, this is not... There's a lot more to this show than what we're seeing.
Right, right.
So I'd like to, about calling, I'd like to start with a foundational philosophical perspective. And you probably have heard, and I know maybe some of the listeners have heard of the perennial philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Aldous Huxley, the writer-philosopher, he wrote Brave New World.
Right, that's been around a while.
It's been around a few years, yeah. Huxley, I think, died in the 1960s, I believe. But he coined the word, this perennial philosophy. It's also known as perennial tradition.
Mm-hmm.
It is the foundation of every spiritual tradition I'm aware of, to include yoga. Now, a lot of folks who teach yoga, who study yoga, don't realize this thread. So I'll cut to the chase and give you the parameters of this, and then we can start to build this idea of calling.
Mm-hmm. And I want to come back to thread when you're done with this part.
Okay, okay.
All right.
All right, good. So the story is, if you will, or the premise is that yoga has been around, started about 5,000 years ago, as we know it.
Mm-hmm.
Probably one of the oldest traditions, other than indigenous traditions that we're aware of. And the old yogis, they were called rishis. Think of the same category of folks as the prophets of the Old Testament, or the seers of other traditions, shamans of other traditions.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to have asked similar questions of life. And one of the big questions, at least for the rishis, they said, if we can answer this one question, it's going to inform all the other questions we have.
Mm-hmm.
And the one question was, is there anything that does not change in the universe? Is there a changeless reality? As you look around in our observable world, things are born, things die, change is inevitable. And is there a constant? All of the folks in these spiritual traditions across the world, as I've seen it and studied it, it was in deep meditation. Some would call it deep prayer. The words are not particularly prayer. They connected with that part of them that we were just talking about, that intuitive consciousness. And there seems to be a consensus across cultures that there's three points. And this is how Aldous Huxley actually broke this down. The first observation that the rishis and other prophets made is that in the world of change, there is a changeless reality.
There is a constant.
There is a constant. Mm-hmm. Now, the yogis called it Brahman.
Okay.
The Jewish prophets called it Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
Others call it God the Father,
mm-hmm.
or the universal consciousness. There's the Tao.
Well, and I'll interject mm-hmm. here for mm-hmm. just 1 second, because all of those are pretty much translated into two words, the I am.
The I am. Yeah, and so I mean, we can get into it, because that, mm-hmm. in yoga, that is actually a focus.
Mm-hmm.
Am I that? I'm not that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And mm-hmm. burning bush in the Old Testament.
Exactly.
I am Yahweh.
I am that I am.
Mm-hmm. So we start to see that.
Mm-hmm.
The second observation.
And this is one of those threads.
It is a thread. In yoga, that's called a sutra.
Yeah. And to sutra things together.
So it's where it comes from.
Right.
And, you know.
So if people listening can kind of understand that what we're saying is not a bunch of disjointed words, but it is a way of taking a very large needle and suturing all of these beliefs together so that it makes some sense.
We're all saying the same thing.
We are.
We're just getting confused by what our brains are doing.
Because
our language
and
words are the tool of the cerebral cortex.
Exactly. And it's not a heartfelt.
Mm-mm.
So once you resonate with the fact that, this makes sense, and I know that it makes sense, you know, that knowing mm-hmm. again, then it can be sewn together.
All
the cultures were talking about the same thing, we just use different words.
Absolutely. And so the second observation was that changeless reality is manifested in every human being.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it is who we truly are. And in yoga, we'd say this is your authentic self.
Right.
And the word that they use in yoga is the Atman, or the self with the large S. In other traditions, it's the soul. And there's words. Other cultures have other words. But it is that. That is who we are, right? In essence. The third point, which is, comes to the calling, the third observation is the purpose of life is to connect with and eventually live out of the changeless reality that's manifested in us. And to be in the world, but not of the world.
And I think that's probably one of the toughest lessons for all of us that are living, is to be in it, but not of it.
Absolutely true. This is where opening to that intuitive consciousness, and this is where these tools like the labyrinth and other tools, other vehicles, whether meditations and prayer and various tools to help us open that up. Mm-hmm. Even talking about the mandala on the app, mm-hmm. okay? They're all moving in the same direction. They're trying to help us shed a little bit of that grip, the mind, which the mind I identify as being, or they call the ego self. It's your body, it's your thoughts, it's your emotions, mm-hmm. okay? But that's not who we are. Those are tools that help us navigate the here and now. But we have other tools to navigate things yeah. that are in a timeless way.
Right, and the other tools are so hidden within us sometimes that it takes a lot to navigate to find them.
Absolutely true. It's a stripping down process. It's mm-hmm. really...
And that's what you did on your... what did you call it? The pilgrimage mm-hmm. in Spain is... For those who didn't listen to that show, please go back and catch it, because I loved that show, you know, with you.
Thank you.
But you had to get rid of your shoes. You had to get rid of your maps. You had to get rid of everything.
And more than anything, a lot of preconceived ideas.
Right, because you were going to, I think you said you had some business thoughts.
Oh, I had a big plan. We're going on a 500-mile walk, and I was trying to do this just to... Just briefly review the other recording. I was trying to build a rite of passage for my son, who was 15, mm-hmm. and he was seriously thinking about going into the military. I wanted to give him another experience, so maybe that would satisfy his need for that mm-hmm. rite of passage initiation. And for myself, I was, I've got 30 days. I was self-employed. I still am. Had all these big ideas I wanted to think about, and I said, 30 days of just being able to focus on that and work out all the details of the business. And it turned out
by day two
I was just 1 foot after another. That's right. All I could think about. Right. And anything that you really didn't need, you started shedding, because it's all weight. Mm-hmm. and it causes physical.
So symbolic. Well,
it's the metaphor.
Wow. Yeah.
So we get involved in these metaphorical experiences, mm-hmm. the labyrinth, the mandala, walking pilgrimage. I call these quickening tools, mm-hmm. meaning they accelerate a life process.
Right, right. And somebody else might have had a near death.
That's a quickening.
And that's a quickening for sure. A wake-up call.
It's a wake-up call. It's a great, another great word for it. Mm-hmm. So if the purpose of life is to connect with and live out of that authentic self, then what we're talking about is having a greater and growing capacity to hear our calling. Mm-hmm. Because the calling is coming not from the sky. It's coming from within us.
Within us, right.
The questions we have access to the answers, mm-hmm. but we have to know how to listen. It's like the old radios, mm-hmm. you know. You have your station.
Fine-tuning.
You had to fine tune, get through all that static to get to your station.
Exactly.
And everybody's got to be quiet, because sometimes it's really soft. Mm-hmm. You know, the divine speaks to us in whispers. We talked about this earlier today.
Right.
So all of these listening for the call requires you stripping away things that are in your way. What's the noise? And most of the noise is in our head. Mm-hmm. Okay. Most of our stress, anxiety, and distraction comes from dwelling on the past, regretting the past, and anticipating the future. Mm-hmm. So most of these practices, like the labyrinth, their design is initially to bring you focus to the present moment. Mm-hmm. And there's a variety of ways to do that. So if you have this underpinning of this, so I know what the purpose of life is. It's to do that. To live out of that in a growing way, realize, I've got to dance.
I have a question, and I think that probably listeners may share my question, but sometimes listening and finding that we can be on a particular path, isn't it like the labyrinth where you are going down and then all of a sudden you have a 180?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And then you can be on a different path. And it's being, but it's still the same path.
There's only one path.
Okay. All right.
This is the difference between a labyrinth and a maze.
Okay.
A maze has traps. It has dead ends. It actually has multiple paths.
I've been in a corn maze where I finally just gave up.
Climb over the wall and go home.
I did.
Yeah. Okay.
I did. I was like, after 2.5 hours in Wisconsin with my grandchildren, and we'd go up on these little bridges to kind of get a point of reference.
A vantage point.
Yeah. And then come back down, and I would still be lost. And after 2.5 hours, I went, I'm done. I'm done.
But the maze is designed to do that. And a maze is designed for you to lose yourself.
Mm-hmm.
The labyrinth is designed for you to find yourself.
Find yourself.
And all you have to do is follow the path.
So following your intuition, following that little whisper.
Following the whisper.
Listen, follow, trust.
And trust. And trust that. Because one of the biggest things I think that we, and once again, we've been talking a little bit about before we went on the air about men in our culture, the dominant culture. It's not just America. There's a dominant culture in the world now. And men have, in this dominant culture, have been discouraged in many ways from listening, honoring, and trusting that intuitive voice.
How many women do you know? Because I know the majority of women say, he just doesn't listen.
Nope.
And so that fits that culture, is that I would say the majority of men think they have the answer. And so if you simply follow my guidance, you'll be okay. And the woman is then kind of pushed down, like your thoughts don't count, your message doesn't count. And so what you're really saying is that we all have the ability to follow our path, but men maybe need to stop being in the cerebral and to move to the heart. Let a woman guide you a little bit and trust. Trust that the answer may not necessarily be what you thought it was.
I agree. I agree. But I think that even going one step further, yes, being able to allow the feminine, if you want to call that, that energy guide you, whether it's an actual other woman or another way of knowing. You know, there's a lot of women now who are living in the head.
Absolutely.
And this is something that it's not just a male. It's a, if you want to, I was just at a workshop where a lot was being talked about toxic masculinity in our culture. And I agree with that. But it's also, it's not the male versus the female. It's honoring both energies.
The yin and the yang.
The yin and the yang. Mm-hmm. And dancing together. Mm-hmm. And not power over, but power with.
You know, I refer that quite often as a partnership, that you're not trying to subdue either one, but you're walking together in a partnership. And, you know, it would be lovely to think that most marriages work that way, but unfortunately they don't. It's usually one wanting to control the other rather than walking together.
I had a conversation the other day with, 'cause in my wedding, my wife and I, in our wedding, we had the traditional candle. You both have a taper, and you
light
your candle, and then you blow yours out. And I offered that I think that although beautiful as that is, I think it's a misnomer.
Okay, go ahead. Explain a little bit more.
Because that is representing that these two separate candles, separate individuals, come together and light this third thing.
Right.
But blowing their candles, their tapers out, it's you don't sublimate yourself.
Right.
There's a time, it's 1 + 1 = 3. The third thing is the relationship.
It's the us part.
It's the us part. But when we have to think that we have to give up ourselves.
Exactly. That would mean that you couldn't go to a workshop in North Carolina because she'd have to go with you.
Exactly. Or so, vice versa. You know, so it's this third thing. And there's a time and place to surrender to the relationship. But then there's another time and place for one partner to surrender to the other.
Exactly. You know, they refer to, I'm going to bring in something that I found very fascinating about birch trees. You know, birches, number one, they're not just white. They're also black birch trees, and I did not know that.
I did not. That's news.
Yeah. and they are primarily in the Appalachians, but they're up in, you know, the eastern part of the United States as well. And the bark is darker. It's mm-hmm. very distinctly darker. But the birch bends more than any other tree. So that when you climb a birch tree, it will bend with your weight. And I found that so fascinating because the Native Americans always knew that. Mm-hmm. And trees talk to each other, mm-hmm. and people talk to each other, but trees have a tendency to listen and work with you, that bendability. And sometimes people don't.
Great metaphor. Mm-hmm. It's a great metaphor for, I mean, what tree gets uprooted in hurricane around here in Florida? Oak trees,
yeah. And the palms bend.
The palms bend, and they survive. Mm-hmm. I kind of wanted to throw in another idea here, because one of the things what I'm being called is people need to, there needs to be a context. What is this random thing that happens to me every once in a while? Or is it a constant thing that's happening to me all the time? When we ask a question, what's my next move? I think that that's the big question most people have. Mm-hmm. What do I do now? Not what's the meaning of life or what happens when I die. I mean, there's a time and place for that. But on a daily basis, what do I do now? I don't know what to do. Oh my gosh, I just lost my job. Oh my gosh, I just lost a loved one. Or I have to move. There's a big change that happens. Mm-hmm. Where do I go for that guidance? Mm-hmm. A consistent path to tap into that underground stream.
You know what's funny as you're talking about that is look at all the self-help books mm-hmm. and the people that are now doing YouTubes, now mm-hmm. have all kinds of websites mm-hmm. for self-help. And not that Synergy Connection Radio isn't part of that, because we're trying to give people some tools, mm-hmm. you know, to help them navigate and connect those dots. But, you know, I think the concept of people asking the question and then somebody going, well, I'll write a book about that.
Right.
Or I'll do a show about that. So that part's been out there. Now it's navigating and helping people reach those locations so that they can go within and begin to decipher. Like, okay, I'm kind of feeling that maybe this is the direction I need to be going in. And you did your pilgrimage.
Yeah.
Not everybody's going to go to Spain, but everybody can go to the beach. Everybody can go to a park. Everybody can write and journal.
And sometimes our calling, and pilgrimage is, being called to pilgrimage is hearing a call
and
doing
it.
And mm-hmm. doing it, mm-hmm. okay. But it doesn't always manifest, like you just said, mm-hmm. the same way for everyone. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, like Dorothy, Wizard of Oz, we talked last time.
Right.
You're thrown in, you're calling, you get plucked out of something, and now you're called to be something.
Exactly.
Or to do something. It may not be something you want to do.
Well,
it might be a really, really hard thing to do.
Yeah. I mean, look at how many. I mean, I can speak from my own personal experience because, you know, there was a period of a lot of years where I had a brother who was terminal, a father who became terminal, a mother who became terminal. That all happened in like 3.5 years. And then a husband who was ill for 12. And I didn't want to do any of those things, but there was nobody else to do it.
And I
knew how.
And this is stepping up to the call.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that we get what we, you know, you don't always get what you want, but you get what you need. Mm. And life puts us in, just like a yoga posture, life puts us in postures to highlight our imbalances.
Right.
To learn from. Mm-hmm. I don't know where I'm lacking or where I need to, until life puts us in a set of circumstances. Mm-hmm. So that kind of goes to a direction that...
So maybe I needed to learn how strong I was.
Absolutely
had to do it.
And there could be a whole chain, it probably is, a whole web of people that connected with you and all that. Think of the chain of events with other folks that maybe served their need.
Right, exactly. Because we are ripples.
We're all connected. In fact, one of the word yoga means to connect. That's exactly what it means. Now, it comes from the word yoke, like yoking oxen. But I think that's a really
That seems like a burden.
That's a burden, and that doesn't resonate. It really means to connect. And we have three levels of connection, three levels of disconnection. And this, I believe, honestly, is the source of most constant or chronic stress. Connect with ourselves, mm-hmm. that part of us, this intuitive consciousness we're talking mm-hmm. about, connecting with others, mm-hmm. and connecting with something larger than ourselves, the divine.
The divine. And, you know, in the sense of chakras, which you and mm-hmm. I've talked a little bit about, mm-hmm. but we have six within our bodies, and then we have a crown slightly above our head, and five more. So there's a total of 12 chakras that all lead you back to the divine. So, you know, we've known on some level for probably thousands of years that the objective for our life, our mm-hmm. existence, is to recognize our humanity, but then to get reconnected to the divine.
I'm 100% with you on that. So just to kind of bring some other language in, because one of the things I like to try to do with the labyrinth, and I've talked about this in some of the training I just received, mm-hmm. we talked about it, is bridging communities. Mm-hmm. We talked about all these spiritual traditions having the same thread of truth, the mm-hmm. sutra we talked about. Mm-hmm. But on the surface of, you know, the Jews look different than the Muslims, and Muslims look different than the Christians, and that looks different than the Native Americans, and that looks different than the...
If they don't look alike, then somehow they're rejected.
Right. And exactly. So that connecting mm-hmm. is important. And so when I start to throw yoga terms out here, because yoga and a lot of the terminology is very misunderstood, and I have a workshop coming up where I'm talking about the inside story of yoga, where I'm explaining the rest of the practice. But let me just throw some words out, a couple words.
Okay.
First of all, you've heard the word dharma.
Yes.
Okay, a lot of dancing the dharma. Okay, dancing the dharma. And a lot of folks have different ideas of what dharma is. But there are really three levels of dharma. So when we're talking about it, we have to put it in context. Think about what we talked about, the perennial philosophy, for a minute. So that's the ground floor. Mm-hmm. So dharma, the big version of dharma, is, I call it the blueprint of the universe. It's the Tao, mm-hmm. the T-A-O. It's the way things work. You know, it's God's blueprint, if you want to call it that. The second level is, as humans, we share a human dharma. We all have the same mission: to connect with our authentic self, that our intuitive consciousness, and start to live out of that divine center. Mm-hmm. Now, what most people talk about dharma is, oh, I'm following my dharma. This is a lot about being called, because what's my dharma? What's my calling? What's my calling? Or what am I going to be when I grow up? And they're misunderstanding that, I believe, because they're looking for a main event. They're looking for one day the lights are going to go on, and I'm going to get it. But we're all on the same mission. You and I and everyone else listening, we're all trying to connect with a part of ourselves that connects us to each other and to the divine. Mm-hmm. But we're all born with different talents, different abilities, different situations, personalities, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Different cultures. Your personal dharma is how you leverage your life, your circumstances, which make it unique, to affect your human dharma. Mm-hmm. And so in reality, this calling idea, every decision we make is a dharmic moment, because we're asking the question, what do I do now? How do I make right? How do I make a right choice? What's right action? Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter how much money you've got or you don't have. You may have been born with a disease. You may have been born crippled. You may have been born a millionaire. All these things, we look at one as being better than the other, but they're all putting us in a situation. How are you going to use this to do that?
Right.
And you're having these very frequent opportunities to dip into the well of wisdom and discernment to answer, what do I do now with this? So one person's situation may look better than another's.
But they have their own stuff.
But they have their own challenges
with
that.
Yeah, they do.
So, and we see, money's a great thing.
But it doesn't bring happiness.
It doesn't bring happiness, and certainly so. So the other part that goes with that dharma idea is another word that I think everybody's heard of is karma. Mm-hmm. And karma is even misunderstood with a lot millions of people who it's part of their religion. Just like as I grew up Catholic, and I think the way the simple way I was explained what heaven and hell were, it was a very black and white reward and punishment.
A lot of religions are that way. If you don't do it this way, you're not ever going to heaven.
But karma wasn't ever designed, and most people believe that karma is good karma, bad karma. Right off the bat, there's no such thing. Mm-hmm. Karma is an educative force in a compassionate universe. Think about that fish in the stream. Mm-hmm. The flow of the stream is the universal dharma.
And if you're swimming upstream, it's pretty tough.
But it is. And even if you go off a little bit, it pushes back on you. Mm-hmm. Why? It's trying to get you back in the stream.
Right.
Now, the fish has little fins, and no fish is going to be totally perfect all the time. Sometimes they got to play with the fins to keep in the stream.
Right.
But that fish says, no, I want to go over there. And it goes at an angle against the current. The current pushes back only with the same force that that fish pushed with. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So if I push at a force of 5, the current isn't going to hit me with a force of 50.
Uh-huh, it's going to be 5.
It's going to be 5. Why? Because I don't want to go past center. I want to go right back into the flow. If it's not a compassionate universe, who cares? Uh-huh. The compassion is to keep us in the flow. That's where...
What about the person that's going to say, all right, I hear what you're saying, but I've been hit by a 50, and I don't think that I was giving 50. You know, I've had a car accident. I've got crushed vertebrae. I've got, broken bones. I didn't deserve this. I've lost my job. I didn't deserve losing my job.
It's not about deserving. And I have a good friend of mine who went through addiction recovery and AA. And he's maybe a little bit out of context, but I like the expression. He said, first God speaks to you with a whisper.
If you don't get it.
Then a roar. And then a 2x4.
Right. And I think that's true. And I think that's what people kind of need to sort of understand is that if you're not listening for the whisper, you might get the 2x4.
If you can't listen to the whisper, and that's the whole point, isn't it? We're trying to connect with that intuitive consciousness so that that whisper, tuning into that radio, we hear that. Because I don't have the divine perspective to look at someone's life if they've been in a car accident and had this disaster happen to them, okay? And that's a great question. I didn't deserve this. But again, that's working with the mindset of punishment and reward.
Exactly. So black and white.
Black and white. I did something wrong. I didn't do anything wrong. Why did this happen?
Right.
Once again, you have to put I can't sit over here and put those kinds of things in context of everyone's life.
Right.
But I think that if we're living more and more, that one foot in one world, one in the other, to be in the world but not of it, we can be more proactive and less reactive.
Right.
To not fall into things.
Mm-hmm.
But we're all still trying to, we're all navigating our own stuff. So.
And nobody's going to be the same.
And so I think to get away from the idea of reward and punishment and this type of thing. So to hear the calling, and what am I called to do right now? It's what am I called to do later, but what am I called to do right now? That's the question I think that's the most important, because if you're waiting to say, well, what's my calling in life to do?
And if you're just sitting and waiting to hear it.
Right. You're missing all the little things that you could be listening to right now.
Yeah.
You don't need to know the whole path to take the next step. That's right. What the labyrinth shows you.
Right. There was I don't even know where to tell people to find it anymore, but probably about 25 years ago, I saw a little motivational card that was, coded so that you could carry it around with you. And I'm going to paraphrase what was on it, but it talked about a quilt. And it said our life is like a quilt, and we're only seeing one small piece of it at a time. But at death, we look down. And we can see the entire quilt and how it was all put together. And I think that is, we can be living in the moment of something that is very difficult And then we, you know, do that labyrinth walk and we make the curve. And all of a sudden we see, oh, this is what I learned from that moment. And now I can take those lessons maybe and weave them into, sew them, suture them together into something else that will allow me to do this. So we continue on the path, you know, learning as we go how to maybe live a more rewarding life.
And to listen.
And to listen.
And mm-hmm. during to listen. One of the, and once again, this was in the context of working with some clergy, mm-hmm. said walking the labyrinth. Well, first of all, prayer, because prayer comes up quite a bit with the groups I've worked with. Mm-hmm. And so I think our audience, I'm sure there's a lot of folks that have prayer as a part of their life.
Yeah. And do you have, I mean, because you do work with a number of religious organizations, are the prayers similar?
The way I'm going to explain it, everybody seems to be buying it.
Okay.
Okay. Prayer is us talking to the divine, to our own intuitive consciousness. Mm-hmm. We're saying, we're talking, we're asking a question.
And we're talking to ourselves as much as anything.
Exactly. Because okay. the divine
is within
us.
Right.
Okay. So, and so we're asking a question. Either prayer usually looks like, I'm saying thank you, maybe. Probably not as often as
gratitude.
We should. Gratitude. But more often than not, it's asking a question. I'm putting it out to the universe. I'm putting it out to myself. I'm putting it out to God. What do I do next? What's my next move? I don't know how to
answer. Or please help.
Or please help. Mm-hmm. Or just, yeah.
Or give me some direction.
Give me some direction. Right. Or it could even be more tangible. Please let me, you know, get an A on this test. Please let me get this job.
Right.
And that's us talking. Mm-hmm. But meditation is us listening.
Listening. Mm-hmm.
And for any good conversation, you need both.
Yes, you do.
You can't be talking all the time. And you have to, it's a back and forth. Mm-hmm. But if you, it's going to seem like a one-sided conversation if you don't know how to listen. You don't know where am I listening to and where, how do I access it? Mm-hmm. How do I dial in that station?
You know, one of the things that as a therapist that I used to do with parents, because parents were always dictating to their children as opposed to listening. And so I taught them, and you may know this all along now too, but the questions would be what, when, where, who, and how, and you make one sentence. So what made you think that was a good idea? And then just listen, you know, mm-hmm. when did you arrive at that conclusion? And then listen, mm-hmm. rather than to be giving a lesson in this is what you should have done. Because kids don't learn if they can't process, and asking a question helps them to process.
Absolutely correct. I think that the word process, that's all of this is a process. There's mm-hmm. processing mm-hmm. information, there's processing thoughts, but also looking at all of this as a process mm-hmm. of accessing. Something you mentioned about perspective. You were mm-hmm. talking about, ultimately we're talking about perspective. Mm-hmm. We're in the middle of something. We don't see. You know, I've used a military an example. The private in the trenches mm-hmm. only can see 50 feet in front of him, or 50 yards in front of him. And he doesn't have the general's perspective, who's up on the hill and sees the whole battlefield.
Right.
The general makes a decision, and that private's going, oh, he's out of his mind. You got to be kidding me. We have a limited perspective. Mm-hmm. Maybe I said this last time in that last recording. It's like my granddaughter, who's now 6, her name's Luna. And I'm going to use her as an example. This isn't totally real, but it's a good. It's close enough. Mm-hmm. She says, "Grandpa, I want candy for dinner." I said, "Well, honey, I can't give you candy for dinner. This usually happens after Halloween." And she said, "Yeah, but no, I want candy. I really want the candy for dinner." So we go through this thing, and I said, "No, here's what I'm going to give you." And I give her a healthy meal. And she gets very mad. She says, "You're the worst grandpa in the whole world," and goes and slams the door. Now, what do we have here? She asked for something that she didn't have the perspective to know was not good for her.
Exactly. She just knew she liked it.
She just knew she wanted it mm-hmm. at that moment. The difference between me and her is simply I have perspective.
Right.
But you see how angry mm-hmm. she gets. And people have, you know, I've had this with, you know, I have been talking with other folks. I had a mother of a young woman who was my student, and the student died. She had died of cancer, and her mom said, I was sitting talking. Mom was, she just kind of wanted to talk, and she wanted to know if meditation could help with her grief. Mm-hmm. I just said, well, what do you, what's your loudest noise right now? What's, she says, I'm mad. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, well, what are you mad at? Well, I'm mad at God. And I said, mad at God, well, okay, go on. She said, and I said, why? Well, she said, I prayed. And I said, what did you pray for? Well, that my daughter wouldn't die. And your daughter died, so now you're mad. Mm-hmm. And very understandable. And I'm not in a position, I'm not a mental health specialist or anything, but I kind of used that story. I said, we don't have the divine perspective maybe all the time. Once in a while, we get a glimpse of it.
Well, and in reality, and as you're, and I'm smiling as I'm thinking about what you're saying, because in reality, if we are all divine beings, ultimately she's angry at herself, because as a parent, I should have been able to prevent my child from dying. I didn't do my job.
And that's why you're the mental health professional. But no, that's a great point. I think that's a great point. Is, you know, I don't know if she was ready to hear that right then, and maybe.
If she's still working with you at all, I think I would gently help her see that, because she's put God outside of herself rather than within herself. And, you know, I just find sometimes that I think God smiles at us as a parent or a grandparent that goes, well, you'll get it eventually.
Yep, I think so. You know, what's kind of, I have to say this, event I went to in California, two-thirds of the folks who were training with me, it was labyrinth training, they were all clergy.
Okay.
And it's interesting. Oh, very, very, very great, wonderful group of folks. Very enlightened, if you will. But this woman, I said, I know she belonged to a church, a local church here, a big one, an affluent church. And I said, have you talked, what we're doing here, have you talked to your minister?
They wouldn't understand is probably what she's saying.
But she said, no, she said, I did talk to him. And what did he say to you? And he, to this day, I can't even, it's hard for me to even say it, because he said, I really understand where you're coming from. I know you, but I have nothing for you.
Oh, wow.
I relayed that story to this group of labyrinth facilitators and ministers, and they all these jaws were dropping that... quote the Bible or something. You went to school for this.
I have nothing for you. Wow.
And I'm thinking, you know, so many levels, that just kind of woke me up. And I didn't make a criticism of that. I just said, well, maybe find someone else.
You know, okay, and we're coming to kind of a close on our show too, but in some ways that's what doctors do. You know, you go in and you have a chronic illness or you have something that's acute. And how many times will a doctor, in a way, say, I have nothing for you? Now, the doctor feels terrible because the Hippocratic Oath basically says, first, do no harm. And so he's harming them by saying, I have nothing for you, rather than saying, well, you know, let's look at some other options. Maybe there isn't a pharmaceutical or a surgery. But if he or she... were a little more connected to meditation or to journaling or to, you know, getting in touch with those emotions that are causing such grief internally, then he would have something or she would have something to offer. So I think one of the big things, whether we're teachers, clergy, doctors, attorneys, we have to understand at some level that we can't provide all of the answers, that the answers do lie within that individual, and help them go explore that.
And if you have the experience as the doctor or the clergy or whatever to have attempted or some level of success with connecting with that intuitive consciousness.
And most of them don't, unfortunately.
They can then guide.
Right,
and,
right.
And one of the things, too, we talked about, and might be a way for us to...
Well, yeah, because we have to come to a close.
We have to come to a close. is that back to the whole male-female dance. I said, what happened, this toxic masculinity that seems to be running the world right now.
Yes.
Just like the minister who didn't have an answer. Just like the doctor who's at a loss. Men in general in our culture, the dominant culture, many lack the ability to know where to go for answers,
right.
for wisdom, for compassion.
Right.
So they're reacting or acting or reacting out of only one small part of themselves.
Rather than finding the
guidance.
Heart.
Yeah. Finding the heart and finding that to guidance. And I think that's sort of part of my mission is to help others, men and women, of course, but seeing that men are in kind of a place right now that they need initiation. They need rites of passage. They need a way, a context, and a path to connect with that other part of themselves.
Right. Oh my goodness. An hour. Flew.
I can't believe it.
Flew. All right. So everybody, please, if you listen to this program, if you love listening to Doug, and I'm sure everybody did because he does a wonderful show, please send them to the archive shows at synergyconnectionradio.com. It'll be up on LinkedIn. It's going to be a podcast soon. It's going to be on Facebook. I have a Facebook page now that's Synergy Connection Radio Facebook page. So please go find it and like it and listen to shows that will be there as well. I think this is doing a wonderful job for people in general to help them make those connections between their physical, spiritual, mental, and emotional parts of themselves as they go within to find that heart coherence. And Doug, I know you'll be back on again soon, but in the meantime, everyone go out there and make this your best life. Thanks so much for joining me. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Boomers Forever Young is really making a name for themselves as an exciting nutritional company with products that really work. People from all over the country are starting to take notice. Their whole person approach to health and wellness, combined with their unique array of powerful natural health products, are setting them apart from all the other companies in the nutrition industry. Their customers love the one-on-one free consultations and the results they experience. Sound a little too good to be true? Then go online to boomerboost.com today and sign up for a free consultation with a product specialist or just give us a call at 1-800-861-4609. Again, that's boomerboost.com or call 1-800-861-4609 to join the thousands already experiencing the benefits of Boomers Forever Young products.